Blog Talk Radio. Hello, and thank you for listening to Heart and Soul Reflections on Purpose, Passion, and Perseverance, and to listening to one of my all-time favorite songs, Green Onions. I'm Jory Fisher, your host, and joining me today, April 28, 2010, is our special guest, author, speaker, and trainer, Heil Rutledge. Thank you, Heil, for being with us this week.
Thank you, Jory. It's very exciting to be here with you.
Well, good. And we're hoping that my co-host, Beth Scanzani, will be able to call in. The lines are open, and I'm going to keep an eye out for her. And if so, I know she will add a lot of depth and richness to the conversation, as she always does. Well, our topic today is purpose and passion through self-awareness. And in just a bit, I'm going to ask Kyle to give us a brief preview of our topic. And first, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to our faithful fans and participants, and an especially warm welcome to those of you who are listening today for the first time. So, Heil, tell us a little bit about your topic.
Well, purpose and passion are two very important words, and one of the to try and find the elements in your life that actually to pull you forward and give your life meaning, that purpose and that passion really rest on your ability to be self-aware, to have some insight into what makes you unique, what makes you different, what your needs, what your drivers are. And so what I want to talk with you and with our listeners today about is two particular tools. We're going to look at psychological type as approached by the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Assessment, the MBTI, a very popular tool out there in the world, and also a very up-and-coming tool on emotional intelligence called the EQI, and how these two tools can actually give you some insight into self-awareness, give you really good handles on your own self-management to help you find that purpose and passion in your life.
Wonderful. We'll certainly look forward to hearing about that. But before we begin, I just want to give our listeners a framework for the show and for today's call. Beth Scanzani's and my vision for Heart and Soul is to create a place, number one, where you can be inspired, encouraged, and supported by people who are making a meaningful difference in their own lives and in the lives of others. And secondly, where you can gain some insight into your life purpose and how you can express that unique life purpose to the fullest. Our motivation for hosting Heart and Soul is our deep desire to fulfill and express our respective life purposes, which includes helping you discover who you are and how you're meant to use your gifts and talents in the world around you. To listen live by telephone at 12 noon Eastern or 9 a.m. Pacific, call 1-347-326-9296. To listen live online, go to blogtalkradio.com, type Jory Fisher, J-O-R-Y-F-I-S-H-E-R, in the search box, then click on today's episode. If you wish to join our live chat room discussions or share your voice in our on-air conversations, you need to register first by clicking on Register on the homepage of blogtalkradio.com and entering your name and email address. If you want to listen to our archived episodes, type Jory Fisher in the search box, then click on the episode you wish to hear. Remember, you can always download the episodes as MP3s or to iTunes. We encourage you to participate actively today by sending us your comments or questions via the chat room. It will be a little difficult for me to monitor the phones today if Beth isn't able to get on, but I can and will monitor the chat room. We're going to close the show with a sneak preview of the next edition of Heart and Soul, which of course will air next week. So now it is my heartfelt pleasure to introduce Heil Rutledge, CEO and owner of OKA, which is Otto Krager Associates. Heil is the author of many books and training resources on personality type and emotional intelligence, as well as an experienced organization development consultant, trainer, and speaker. With a robust background in management sales, adult education, and leadership development, his primary area of expertise is the use of the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, commonly known as the MBTI, and the EQI assessments as self-management, leadership, and communication tools. He has a BA in Humanities from Hampton-Sydney College and a Master of Science in Organization Development from the American University. Heil resides with his wife and two sons in Falls Church, Virginia, and that's where my family lived when I was first born. Well, when I was born, I guess. Well, I am born a second time, but we won't go into that. When I was born. And before we start the interview, Heil, I'm wondering, is there anything you want to add to this introduction?
No, I appreciate your giving me that much attention. I'm impressed with my background when I hear it come from you, Jory. Very excited about our talk today.
Oh, well, good. Did you start to wonder, who is that guy?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to add that several years ago, I took a class from Heil on using type in coaching. And Heil, I love that experience so much that I've stayed in touch with you all these years, and you were one of the first people I reached out to as a guest for this radio show. So I'm so glad you could join us today.
Thank you.
Well, let's go ahead, sure, and dive in. And would you please start by telling us how you became so passionate about the subject of emotional intelligence? I'm wondering if you could say why it is that you're so gosh darn fired up about it.
Well, the emotional intelligence used broadly, just the study of self, and so that you can, part of being emotionally intelligent is actually is knowing who you are, what your drivers are, self-awareness, and being able to use that self-awareness toward better self-management. And at the time, I was in my mid-late 20s, I guess, I was in career development, working to help people find jobs and position themselves in kind of what was at the time a tough workplace. Mm-hmm. And I had heard about this tool called the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, the MBTI, and so I came to North Virginia, to Fairfax, to take this course to teach me how to use it. And I knew that I would be at least passively interested in the tool, but it was very much just a tool in my mind that I would plug into my career development work. And I got sparked and really very much fell in love with this tool and its use while I was here. And the then owner of the company, Otto Krager, came in and did a presentation halfway through the week. And really my life was forever changed. I decided right then, in my mid-20s, that I wanted to become him. Now, it took me about a year to snap out of that and realize that actually what I wanted was to do what he was doing as well as he was doing it. But in an earlier version of myself, I was very clear that I just wanted to graft my life onto his. Mm-hmm. So then the next few years really became about my teaching type and writing about type. And if anybody would sit still long enough, I would take them through this this set of ideas and this vocabulary and giving them ideas about how they might be able to import it into their lives and use it. And which led to a few years later, I came back to OKA and became an associate of theirs. And then eventually when Otto was looking for a way to transition out of the business, and then I came in and ran the business, became his partner, and then actually just bought the business a couple of years ago. And so mm-hmm. Otto is still very close to me, but now the business is mine. And so when I look over the mm-hmm. last 15 to 20 years, I can see that it actually has been a fairly straight line, and much of mm-hmm. that has been because of this passion that was created with this very special tool.
I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm wondering, someone else could have gone through, I'm sure several other people attended that class that you took 20 years ago and probably came away thinking, oh, wow, that's really great. But it became more of a shelf help tool that they
yes.
put back on their bookshelf and walked away yes. from, maybe thought about it once or twice down the road. What is it about this work and Heil Rutledge, do you think, that was such a strong connection?
Well, to step back and answer that question, because it has to do with not only me, but a lot of what we're here to talk about regarding everybody today. And this, I think in a way, it's a shame that we are taught when we're little that we could grow up to be anything we want to be. Because while I love the freedom of that, and while I love the empowerment that's in that message, also that message conveys this idea that anybody can be anything, when actually our uniqueness and our gifts tend to focus us in a certain direction. There's certain things that are more enjoyable. There's certain things that will really harness that passion and uniqueness. And I think focusing in your life in one direction or the other really is a good thing, even though by so doing that limits your focus or takes it away from something else in your life. And so I think it resonated so well with me because I had a natural inclination to zero in on who people were, what they wanted, what they were about, and to try and do something to help bring them closer to the healthy, functional person within them that either they were already in touch with but just wanted to celebrate more, or that they didn't even know existed but I wanted to help them coax out. And it just so happens that type is one of many, but a very good vocabulary, a very good structure to help people find this part of themselves. And so I not only found it for myself, but I found the tool that could help me facilitate this process in other people.
And I have to say, being one of the recipients of your gifts, I'm so glad you did.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, Heil, I am happy to say it looks as if Beth has joined us. Beth, have I unmuted you properly? I think. Beth?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay. Would you like to say good morning to Heil and to our listeners, or good afternoon, rather?
Yeah, good afternoon, Heil. I'm so sorry I missed the first part of the show, and I'm really happy to meet you.
You too, Beth. I'm very glad that that the three of us could have this conversation today.
Well, I'm going to move right on, Beth, and ask Heil to jump right in with the topic of what is emotional intelligence? Because I know I've been hearing that term for years, and maybe some of our listeners are right on with the definition, but I'd love to get some clarification. What does it mean?
Well, so emotional intelligence is a term that really came up in some academic research and writing in the late 1980s, and it has since been taken and expanded a great deal, mainly by the very popular and I think high quality work of Daniel Goleman, who has written a number of different pieces out in the world. But basically, what emotional intelligence is a collection of components, a collection of elements that comprise general psychological well-being and emotional health. And so that's very broad. It's a very broad definition. But the thought is, what are the elements of self that actually contribute to our general psychological well-being and emotional health? And when defined that way, there are many, many psychological tools that can actually help actual tools and assessments you can take, or just idea sets and vocabularies that you can use to help define, this is who I am and this is who you are. Here's what my needs and motives and drivers are, and this is what yours are. And the more people are in touch with themselves, then the more they are able to manage themselves. And I think the thrust of this conversation and the thrust of most of the work that I do in this area is greater better self-management through greater self-awareness. Better self-management through greater self-awareness. I know myself, I know my limits, I know my strengths, and I can harness all of those to give myself more options. And nothing can be more important in helping me find points of real passion and purpose than my having that as a starting point.
Amen. So, because, you know, I've often thought, why is it emotional intelligence as opposed to emotional awareness or emotional health or something like that? But the way you described it is like, if you have all of that, if you have that self-knowledge and self-awareness, then you're emotionally intelligent. I mean, what do you think? Why do you think it's called emotional intelligence?
If you conjecture specifically, a little bit. It came out of the research that was actually being done by John Mayer, Peter Salove, and David Caruso, and the original work was looking at the utilization of emotions as a tool to cognitively make decisions. So it really was looking at the cognitive role of emotions.
Oh.
And so it started off at a very, very particular element, a very particular focus. Now, the phrase, though, was then popularized and broadened out. And I think it's the broader term emotional intelligence that actually is far more inclusive with many different elements. And also there was an attempt early on to counter this idea of cognitive intelligence, of IQ, that people were smarter, mm-hmm. they weren't. And your IQ is 115 and mine is 97, and that somehow defines us in some way. That's very limiting. And so the broader approach to emotional intelligence, I think, is one that actually acknowledges that there are many ways to be intelligent. There are many ways to be effective.
That's right.
And actually having self-awareness, having good self-regard, having empathy, being able to connect with other people and orient around the other, et cetera. There are many different vantage points, but that these are just as telling about our success as are, in fact, in many cases more so, than traditionally viewed cognitive intelligence. And so I think emotional intelligence as a phrase was also used to neutralize the power of IQ a bit as well.
I have to say I'm having a little fun thinking about my twin daughters, and they'd smile if they heard me saying this. They're 18, and I think it's fair to say that one is off the charts in IQ and high average in EQ, and the other one, it's reverse, off the charts in EQ and high above average in the IQ. So it's really fun even to see how two people who are in the same family can go and develop in different directions.
Well, what's interesting is that there's actually been a lot of research to take a look at how effective is IQ at predicting success on the job. And it turns out not at all, or not very much at all, that IQ will help determine where you land up. Do you get job X or job Y? But who succeeds once they land somewhere, EQ really takes over in terms of your ability to know yourself, to engage with others, to manage your own stress, adapt to the world around you. These are EQ elements, but not IQ elements. And so that's another justification for the phrase emotional intelligence, and that you need more than just a high IQ.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Well, you've already touched on it somewhat, but if you could go into this a little bit more, I'd appreciate it. Why do you believe that self-knowledge is so important?
The thought is, if you were driving down a highway, a road leading out of your neighborhood, and there's a big pothole that is in the middle of the road. The first time you drive over it, it's easy to miss it. It didn't used to be there, anything can surprise you. But driving over it really wreaks havoc with your car and your transmission. And so it would be unwise for you, if you are an effective driver, to hit that pothole every morning on your way out from work. And so the good driver actually develops a habit to go around that hole, to avoid that, so that your car doesn't have to pay the penalty. That's an easy image to see, but we have similar in our relationships with our lives, with ourselves, with other people, with groups. We have these same potholes every day. I'll fall into the same argument with you, Jory, every time we engage over issue X or issue Y. My boss comes down and has some mannerism or engagement that she has with me will push a certain button or trip a switch, and all of a sudden I go into the same reaction that I know is going to get a negative result if I consciously think about it, but I don't. I would argue that that the more I know where these not only potholes are, but also where my knowledge and skills as a driver, not of a car, but the driver of me, that my skills to avoid these, to navigate around them, maybe even my skills in filling in the potholes so
yeah,
that it's
that's
not
what
there
I was
anymore,
right.
it will actually mean that I don't fall into this hole anymore, and that that means that my relationship with you is stronger. My ability to solve problems is stronger. I now don't have forces pulling against me. I actually have forces now falling in behind me, helping me kind of find my power and effectiveness, not trying to dilute those things. Self-awareness, I think, is it's not the only answer, but it's very hard to be effective and efficient. And I would say it's certainly hard to find your purpose and your passion if you don't know who you are and you don't know what you want.
I'm reminded that one of my daughters always teases me. This is one of the twins. She loves to read, and she mostly reads fiction, but not exclusively. But she laughs at me because on my bookshelves I have books on calling and purpose and career and all of this. And so she lovingly calls them mommy's self-help books. And yeah. I'm just thinking, though, when we think of the whole self-help industry, there have certainly been those who think that that's very narcissistic, you know, to just get so enveloped in our own personal development and just looking inward. But would you please address how perhaps, at least to a certain extent, without being extreme, that maybe it's not so narcissistic after all?
Yeah, right. On the contrary, I'd say that much of the topic we're talking about is actually comes down to striking a balance. And so, for instance, within the emotional intelligence model that I like the most, the EQ model, intelligence quotient. Emotional quotient, and by Reuven Baron. There are 15 different elements, and one of these is self-regard, as an example. The self-regard is someone's ability to respect and accept themselves as basically good, that they like and accept themselves as positive and likable, and that includes emotional, psychological, and intellectual, and physical as well. So that's self-regard. Now, on one end of it, just to say having high self-regard is a good thing, while true, is a little incomplete, because if you have too much self-regard, mm-hmm. then that starts to look like, sound like arrogance, narcissism, vanity, and that actually becomes a problem. And so what we really see is that there's a tension between wanting and needing high self-regard, while keeping that in check and not having too much of it. Back to your specific question and finding the tension point there. Somebody's wanting to, I want to know about myself. I want to understand why I am, what strengths I have, and I also want to know what potholes, if you will, are out there in my life so that I can first understand them, acknowledge them, know how I've contributed to them, drive around them, and maybe even in the end fill some of them in. And that's that drive is just positive. However, I can overdo that and become so self-consumed that I am so fascinating and I am so so interesting to myself that I sometimes have a hard time letting go of that, and I keep feeding that. That can look narcissistic. That can look like navel gazing. And that becomes counterproductive. And so doing it and feeding that that fire, I think, is a good thing, realizing that any fire can actually spread out of control and become destructive is a danger with any single element that we talk about. Not about do you have it, yes or no. It's are you holding the tension that it presents in your life in a way that's positive. And there are always going to be some days where you strike that balance a little better than others.
Well said. Well, focusing on the positive, how would you say that self-awareness, the self-knowledge, the emotional intelligence, how would you say that all of us, all of that helps us to lead more purposeful and passionate lives?
Well, the thought is I see living a purposeful and passionate life is basically seeing that, that the process of my engaging in the work that I'm doing, whatever that happens to be, and that the process itself is enjoyable. Another element in the EQ model is happiness. And happiness really takes a look at your ability to feel satisfied with your life, with yourself and others, and to have fun in the engagement of your life. In order for me to do that, and so if you have a passion for what you do, if you have a purposeful life, then your engagement with your activities day to day actually feeds that purpose. If you're about attending to your family, if you're about contributing to the thought or the production in a certain element, if you're whatever it is that you're focusing in on, in order for you to have a passionate connection, in order for that to actually feed your purpose, you have to have stepped back and given some thought to what do I like? What do I do more than or do with more focus and more joy or more zeal than anyone else? What is it that makes me happier that actually I have more ego attachment to than some other activity? And that has to start with a little bit of curiosity about yourself.
And so
that's a lot of what these tools, whether it's type or EQI or any of another hundreds of tools out there, that when they do their job, it's about sparking that curiosity, asking and framing the good questions, and then offering some good potential answers for them.
Well, excellent. Well, Beth, I'm curious if any of that has caused you to come up with some questions or comments.
Well, I love all of this stuff, and I am familiar with EQ. One of the things that where I've worked with 360, which means you get feedback from other people, emotional intelligence assessments, one of the amazing things is that you talked about self-management, Heil. People actually get an idea of how they impact other people, how the way that we react or how the way that we are actually impacts other people, whether it's at work or at home. And that insight, when people get it, can have just an amazing impact on their appreciation for not only who they are, but the dynamics that they play in the family or in the workplace. And it can create huge shifts, as I've seen.
Yeah, I totally agree. One of the things I like so much about the EQI as a particular tool, and when I was actually kind of shopping around, really, as a consumer for an emotional intelligence framework that fit nicely into my practice, the reason I landed on the EQ was that there's an EQI, which is a self-report. So I am reporting on my own emotional intelligence as I see it. But there's also an EQ360 that allows for exactly what you mentioned, Beth, and that's feedback from outside. There are some other assessments that only do this 360 view, this view from my peers and my subordinates and my boss and family, et cetera. The pluses are exactly what you just mentioned, and I like using them for those reasons. Some of the downsides, just to fill out the other side of the ledger, is there can be there's generally a surprise factor, and sometimes, more often than not, a somewhat bruising thing that can go along with getting 360 feedback, especially for the first time. That I can't believe that you thought I was less emotionally self-aware than I thought I was. I thought I was very empathic, but you think not so much. Now, a good 360 tool, of course, has it anonymous, so I don't know who said what exactly. But the thought that my subordinates, the four people who report directly to me, don't think as highly of me in area X or area Y as I do, is shocking and deflating to many people. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have that conversation.
But
I think it helps to get into the pool to start with myself. And so let me first see what I think about myself, and then let me open up and get data from the world around me. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I when I started working with these kinds of things, I had the same feeling. Oops, this is going to not feel good. But what I've learned from that is that it is what it is. And it might hurt a little bit, but it is what it is. That is how the subordinates feel, or that is how the other people feel. So either we have to shift the way we express ourselves, or shift something else, because the fact is that is the way they feel.
And that's one of the added complexities, and that has actually made the EQ model very effective for me, is let's go back to self-regard as an example. Uh-huh. That if I overdo Jory, we'll use you as an example. If you overdo self-regard, if you are over-engaged with your self-regard, that will look arrogant and kind of narcissistic.
Mm-hmm.
However, let's say you don't. Let's say you have just nice, high, healthy, effective self-regard. But I, as one of your colleagues or subordinates, have lower self-regard. When I answer the questions, I might, when I see you, I might not see nice, healthy self-regard. Mm-hmm. I see you overdoing it because you do it more than I do.
Projection,
And so the whole concept of projection is nicely supported by the structure. Are you arrogant, or do you just have healthy self-regard when I do not? And the tools don't answer that question. Tools just beg the question. And that's why this is such a good tool to use to help feed a coaching process or a professional development process, because trying to take a look at this not as a photograph but as an impressionist painting and determine what does this mean and what are you going to do about it is where the art of this, I think, is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it is. It is such an art. And as you said, Heil, you know, really a need for a good coach or someone to help support people through the process, because it isn't necessarily something you should just go try at home.
Right, which is actually why the tools we're talking about and most of the tools that are worthwhile in feeding some of this passion and purpose work, so many of them are what are considered B-level tools, which means they're restricted. There needs to be some kind of educational requirement or some kind of certification that is needed before a trainer or consultant can have access to them, because while they're intended to be very positive, supportive tools, they can get to some sensitive places and need
exactly.
to be used very deliberately and sensitively.
Well, thank you. Beth, I'm going to move on a little bit. And Heil, I just want to say that I think you know that Beth and I are both Carl Jung aficionados. And I'm wondering if you would give our listeners some insight into his influence on the Myers-Briggs type indicator, switching a little bit here from the EQ.
Right. Well, one of the things that a lot of people don't know, I don't know many people who don't know about type, who haven't heard it, even have taken the tool. It's the most popular tool in the world. A lot of people don't know that it was based on the work of Carl Jung. And Carl Jung worked very closely with Freud. In fact, it was Freud's protege. They were going to work together. Jung was tapped as the next great hope of the psychotherapy movement. He was going to open it up to new markets and do all kinds of things with it. And then the two men had a falling mm-hmm. out. Jung mm-hmm. and Freud never spoke to each other as long as they lived. And there were a couple of things that caused the schism. But it was the schism that actually led Jung to ask himself, how could people be so different, he and Freud? And from this question came psychological types.
I did not know that background.
And that's the first thing that charged that was he thought Freud was the extrovert and he, Jung, was the introvert. And, you know, what is this difference about, and how could that be? Mm. And so that's that really is what led to psychological types. Now, which then made its way into the to the assessment. But one of the a major break that Jung had with Freud, I mean, one of the bits of content underneath that schism was Jung's belief that that you could have and you actually should have the view of psychology that is healthful, and that is that you and I can be different and be fine, as opposed to psychology being taking a look at you and deciding, okay, Beth, you're sick, but how are you sick? And Jury, how are you somehow sick or incomplete?
Mm-hmm.
Jung liked actually looking at people and saying, okay, we're very different, both fine perhaps, but let's take a look at in a healthful way at our difference. And it's that kind of healthful approach to human difference that underpins the MBTI. That is a critical element of its success.
I'm so glad you shared that. I mean, I knew about the tension, the dispute between the two of them, Freud and Jung, but I didn't realize that was one of the motivators, so to speak,
yeah.
that, you know, plunged him into the study of personality and types.
Well, you know, what's interesting after that is that he wrote this book, Personality Psychological Types, in 1921, and then when that was published in English in 1923, Myers and Briggs pick it up there, and I love this part of the story, because when you see Myers-Briggs, a lot of people think, okay, well, Myers and Briggs as two white guys,
right.
you know, psychologists, PhDs who put this thing together, mm-hmm. and that's wrong. The white part is right, but everything else is wrong. This was two women, a mother-daughter team, mm-hmm. that were not formally trained in psychology, in psychometrics, in statistics, who read Jung's work and understood it, which, first of all, is quite a feat. If you've ever read Jung, you know that Jung did not write to be understood. especially this particular piece, he wrote to really get these ideas out in the world and move on, but he was not interested in making them accessible to a broad audience. But not only did these two brilliant women read it and understand it, but thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we actually took these ideas and made a practical tool out of it? And that started them on a, especially Isabel Myers, the daughter, on a 50-year journey to actually pull these abstractions out of the stratosphere and pull them down to the ground and get a tool that could then stand up with some good validity and reliability and out in the world. And that's what, when it finally hit the public as a publicly accessible tool in the mid-1970s, it already had 20 years of psychometric rigor beneath it. And so that was, and it has become one of the most, the most widely used and translated psychological assessments in the world in history. And it was first. It really blazed the trail. And so it really took the passion and purposeful life of these two women, but especially Isabel Myers, or else this tool that has really revolutionized how we work and how we view professional development and career development. It was her contribution that even enabled this field to evolve the way it has.
I even like the story with them being mother-daughter, and Isabel was Isabel Briggs Myers, her maiden name and then her married name, and of course Catherine, I believe it was Catherine Cook Briggs, and the decision to put Myers Briggs, have it in that order instead of Briggs Myers, was all about being fair, because if it were Briggs Myers, then it would sound like it was all the work of Isabel, the daughter. So, you know, they even had to work through that, but it was years and years and years of type watching, and now it is considered the premier type assessment, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, there are many ways to get to psychological type. Myers-Briggs is just one of them, but no tool has the name recognition. No tool has the validity and reliability behind it that the MBTI does. It is certainly the jewel in the field.
Mm-hmm. So tell our listeners, please, what information can be gleaned from taking the MBTI and how it contributes to self-knowledge.
Right. The MBTI, separate from emotional intelligence, is a very focused model or set of ideas that talks about cognition, how we gather information and how we make decisions. And at its heart, that's all type is about. How our brains are wired, and it's a theory that asserts that we have a hardwired preference, like handedness, but rather than left and right, we're talking about a hardwired preference for a certain way of gathering information. Are we do we orient toward, and do we default by looking at sensate, hands-on, here and now data, or more intuitive, big picture, possibility type data? So what kind of data do we notice first when we engage with the world around us? And then once we gather those data, do we tend to make decisions more objectively, analytically, based on cause-effect logic as a thinker, thinking, deciding? Or do we engage with data and make decisions more from a subjective decision point that actually weighs more human-centered values and relational concerns? And so, as a feeling decider, and so how are our brains wired to gather information and make decisions are at the heart of type theory. And so the thought of, so what information can you get here, is for you to know not what you can do, not what you're good at, or where you will be successful, because those are all based on choices we make. If you choose to get good at something, you can get good at it, period. So it's not about skill. This is about where are you standing when the ball comes at you. What is automatic? And if you're looking for your passion, for your purpose, than having some idea of where is my hard wiring and how am I going to be able to work in such a way that what comes easily to me, what's automatic, those are the tools that I gravitate to first and most often, that's where your passion is found.
That's nice. I had the good fortune of being trained in all of this down in Gainesville, Florida, which is a beautiful beautiful training program if anybody's interested in becoming an administrator of the MBTI. But I remember a distinction that really hit home with me for that sensate one is like, do you take in information via your five senses or do you take in information via your sixth sense or intuition? So
right.
Five senses versus sixth sense. I thought that was really interesting too.
It is what's fascinating experiments that I do when I train with folks on the MBTI is to, while before they know their preferences, so they've taken the assessment but they don't have their results back, I do a little experiment and get the more sensing folks in one group and the more intuitive folks in the other group and just give them an object and ask them to describe it. And the object I like to use most these days is a dollar bill. So they each get a dollar bill, something they see a dozen times a day and never think about it. Well, the sensors grab it and hold on to that thing and talk about numbers and colors and dimensions and very specifically pass this thing around to engage with it. Intuitives, on the other hand, just start talking about dollarness and talk about what a dollar will buy you and how it's a symbol of American decline or maybe the symbol of American power and the bill that's now being debated in the Congress and blah blah blah. So great data, but it has nothing to do with the physical thing I gave them.
I love it. Let me guess, do the NFs, or those who then make decisions based on feeling, start wondering if, gosh, is this your last dollar? Oh, gee, you know, should we give that to the poor man that's begging in the street?
Right. And so, but that's exactly right, that when you start folding in the other preferences, you start getting different twists and shades of that reality. And so we start to see, each individual can see, this is where I tend to go. And while I can be trained and even get, you know, amass a lot of skills in doing whatever I choose to do, that where I am most aligned, where I'm generally happiest, where I feel most secure, where my ego is most fed, is where I can I can be doing these preferences most of the time. And so to find that purpose, to find that passion, it starts mm-hmm. with my knowing, what do I want? What do I need? And then how do I construct a life where I can be there more often than not?
And Hal, would you just take a few seconds to explain what you mean? Oh, in 30 seconds or less, explain ego, because I know I have a feeling that some of our listeners might be conjuring up the pejorative concept of
right,
ego.
Oh, right, good, mm-hmm. Yes. Ego is Latin for the word I, and so it's the psychological construct of what you view yourself to be. And so I am here on the radio talking with Jory and Beth right now. I'm Heil. I'm a man. I'm wearing blue right now. Anything that you can complete that sentence is part of your ego existence. It's your conscious mind constructing mm-hmm. a world and an identity around who and what you are all about. That's your ego state.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Okay, so you've talked about the EQI and you've talked about the MBTI. How would a person decide which assessment to take? Maybe they should take both, but can you talk to that?
Well, the thought is the MBTI is a tool that is often taken to so that somebody can explore her or his individual preferences and learn about learn a good template for kind of self-awareness that could underpin them in any area of life, whether that's personal, professional, vocational, you name it. And this tends to be something that is unchangeable over time, that you can grow and develop, but your type, theory suggests, does not alter over time. Now, the emotional intelligence is a very different approach to self, and that takes a look at the EQI. It takes a look at 15 different elements of emotional, psychological, and emotional well-being. And these are all elements that can and do change over time. If somebody decides that they would be better off with more assertiveness or greater flexibility, then there are specific exercises that you can do once you go through the EQ process to determine, yes, I would like more of that, or wow, I'm overdoing this element. What can I actually do to change and impact that? And so both allow for self-awareness. The EQI is more focused in on looking at what is working for me and what is not, and therefore what behaviors do I need to engage in to improve in my life. And so I will have on your website, we could have those up by tomorrow, April 29th, at womenfindpurpose.com, a couple of write-ups on the MBTI and one on the EQI that just tell a little bit more about the tool.
Beautiful.
And how folks can get in touch with me should they want more data than is there.
Excellent. That'd be great. And Beth, are you qualified to administer the MBTI or EQI?
No, I'm very familiar with it, but I have never gone for certification.
Okay. Then I'll put in a plug for me with the MBTI. I absolutely love it. I thought it was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever been through, and I received the training down in Florida, and I would be very happy to work with people on that. Well, Heil, how can listeners get in touch with you and enroll in the classes that you offer at OKA?
Thank you for asking the question. OKA is a consulting and training firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, and our website is typetalk.com, typetalk.com. And on this site, they can get in touch with me or with staff and take a look at it. It's a great actual resource that has lots of information on emotional intelligence, on type, and we even have a number of things. So, of course, we have courses, and you can see the schedule and sign up, but there are also a number of handouts and materials that are there to peruse and even to download free of charge to get you thinking about and using some of these ideas right away if you'd like. So come to typetalk.com and look around.
Great. Thank you. Well, each week we offer one or more coaching suggestions to help our listeners experience and integrate the information that we've discussed on the show. So today, Heil has generally offered to share his coaching suggestion, and I'm wondering if you would do that now, please.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I was thinking about what a good kind of first step would be. And one idea that underpins much of my work is the thought that we're told about our strengths and weaknesses with great frequency out in the world. And I contend that the weaknesses we have and the weaknesses we are told we have are often strengths that are just overdone or misapplied. And that somebody's arrogance is, yes, that's certainly a weakness, but on one level, that is self-regard that is overdone or done at the wrong time. Being pushy and aggressive is not a good thing. That's certainly a weakness, but at the same time, that's assertiveness that's just overdone, and assertiveness in and of itself is a good thing. And so my coaching suggestion is two things. And first, find a weakness that you have. It might be glaringly obvious to you, or it might be something that has come up in some feedback or an argument that you've had with someone close to you. But find a single weak point that you have in your life, and find a way to reframe that as a strength. That is not to deny it and then not engage with it, but it's a matter of how do I reapply the strength so that this is not a weakness? Do I dial it back? Do I just use it at a different time? Reframe a weakness so that you see it as a strength that needs to be reapplied. And part two of the coaching suggestion is to find a strength that you have, something that you like and are happy about, proud about that you do. And make that extreme and so that you have some sense of, don't do it, but that you have some sense of how might this hurt you or not serve you if it were misapplied. Independence, that's a real strength of mine. Well, what would it look like if I overdid independence? I would not collaborate very often or very well. I would be seen as not very easy to connect with, and that would be a bad thing. And so take a strength you have and see how it could be misapplied so that you will know what pothole to avoid. Those would be two coaching actions that I would suggest.
Excellent. Fabulous. Thank you so much. I'm sure that will be beneficial to all of us on the call and up to our listeners. Okay, well, I just want to move on here and remind our listeners that we truly want Heart and Soul to be an experience we co-create with you. So please join us each week. Please try our coaching suggestions. Please invite one person at least to join us live or to listen to our archives. And please send us your suggestions for topics and guest speakers. We really want to try to reach at least 2,010 people this year and encourage them to live a more authentic, purposeful, and joyful life. Well, I want to say something about next week on Wednesday, May 5th at noon Eastern. My co-host Beth will be speaking on sleeping dreams, and she will be asking questions such as, did you know that over the course of our life we spend more than 6 years dreaming? Sleeping dreams can provide us with amazing guidance, insight, and creative solutions to life's challenges and opportunities. So Beth will be speaking about the 7 buried treasures that we can find in our dreams. Beth, did you want to say anything more about that right now?
Just a couple of quick things. I see dreaming as having our own resident life coach who works the night shift. And really has our own best interest at heart and mind. And so, you know, to have a relationship with one's dreams is just really such a gift. And so I'll help people try to figure out what that's all about and also to help to remember their dreams more easily. So.
That's fabulous. Well, thank you, Beth. Well, everybody, you've been listening to Heart and Soul with Jory Fisher, a life, career, and true purpose coach from Lynchburg, Virginia. With Beth Scanzani, a life leadership and true purpose coach from Rockport, Massachusetts, and with our special guest, Heil Rutledge from Falls Church, Virginia. Heil, do you want to give us your quote for the week?
I would just have people keep in mind that the best way to self-manage is to start with self-awareness, and thank you so much, Beth and Jory, for having me on the show. I'm now not only a contributor, I'm a fan of yours and a listener every week.
Oh, I love it. Fabulous. Well, thank you. Well, I invite everybody to visit my website at womenfindpurpose.com and to email me at Jory at 90 seconds. Email me at Jory at womenfindpurpose.com or Beth at BethScanzani at AOL.com if you'd like to share your questions, ideas, or comments with us. Also, please let me know if you'd like to receive my weekly announcements of our upcoming shows on Heart and Soul. I'd be very happy to include you in my mailing list. So if you enjoyed the show today, would you please consider making the show a favorite on Blog Talk Radio by clicking on the little red heart marked FAV under our show name. Heil, would you like to say goodbye?
Thank you so much. Goodbye, everybody, and thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Beth? Oh, Beth had to drop off. Well, Heil, it's the two of us. Well, until next week then, everybody, may God bless you, keep you, guide you, and inspire you to be all you are designed to be. Take care.